Hello, hello everyone, and welcome to the most discounted podcast in the world, House of Games. Today I'm joined by the king of discounts, king of hosting, and king of Sweden, Mr. Hello! And sadly, his jester of sort, me, Rune. A two-man episode is in the pipeline, dear listeners, so please give way and let us open the doors to this week's episode of House of Games.
Welcome everyone to this very special episode of House of Games. Today is another, solo episode or duo episode, since there's no guest with us. But I think we're gonna do well anyhow. So for this episode, I was thinking, since this is at the time of recording, just before New Year's, and I think at the time this will be published, it's gonna be right after New Year's. So I'm thinking, since it's sort of topical, that we should talk about the year that's been. We've done one episode that's more about the podcast itself, which was the 1 year anniversary episode, but I was thinking to do one episode that is more about our game development for the last year. So it's been a lot that's happened in 2023, all the stuff with Unity, and I've done some stuff, and I imagine that you, Rune, have gone from a very small project to a lot with Sunset Moon. So you want to start with like where you were about a year ago with Sunset Moon and how the journey has been?
So a year ago, I'm trying to think what happened really, because this, what I don't like about looking back at my project is that when I look back, I realize they take much longer than I thought they would. I remember like Knife Boy, my first game, I think it took 3 years to make, but I don't want to think about it. But I think, let's say 2 years ago, I had released Red Colony 3 and I was sort of porting Knife Boy and rebooting it while working on Sunset Moon, because I worked at this facility back in Sweden part-time, and during my breaks I would sit and watch these YouTube tutorials on how to make a farming sim type of game. And this is before we started this podcast, so this is before I even knew about ChatGPT. So I was watching tutorials back then on how to do things. I still do some tutorials nowadays, especially when I work with shaders, because I'm a man of action. I you can't just tell me through text how to do shit. I need to look at it. So I was watching tutorials on how to do like a farming sim game, and the tutorials I watched are the base of Sunset Moon, even though I would say maybe 80% of it is changed over time or been replaced with other codes or my own solutions, because I don't want to do what they tell me to. Yes?
So I'm curious, why did you want to do a farming sim to begin with? What was it that felt like that is, because it's sort of a like an offshoot of what you usually do.
Yeah, well, my philosophy, I suppose, at Runic Codes is to only make games that I want to play. I think my first game, Knife Boy, that was just a passion project born from playing Guacamelee from Drinkbox Studios. And Drinkbox Studios was known to never make sequels back then. So I played Guacamelee while traveling. I played on my PlayStation Vita, and I was just like absolutely blown away with this sort of Metroidvania type of games, which I never played until then. Of course, I played Metroid back in the day and Castlevania, but I suppose I never thought about games like that when I was a kid. So I played Guacamelee, and I wanted to make something like, and that's how I like, man, I want to make Knife Boy. I want to turn that into a video game, because I was just making a comic book while traveling, backpacking. And that comic book you can find inside the game now. But anyway, that's Knife Boy started as a comic book for fun. And then I played Guacamelee on the side, and I wanted to turn Knife Boy into a Guacamelee type of game because I really loved it. And I thought, if I'm going to make a game, I want to make something that I love to play myself. And then you said it's an offshoot, this farming sim type of thing. Well, when I made Resident Evil, when I made the Red Colony games, for me, that was also my passion or my love for story-driven games, and especially in the horror genre. And I was also like, there's a lot of drama going on in those games. So I can't quite remember where that came from. I believe I've said in another podcast, I guessed at one time, that the idea came from watching my wife watching these Bachelor shows, which I thought was just absolutely ridiculous. How can you waste your time watching this shit? And then I would sit down next to her, and of course I got hooked to watching these people making out and flirting and backstabbing each other, all that drama that I never seen before. And I know that sounds weird, but I stopped watching TV when I was 15 or 16, so I'm just completely out of the whatever happens on TV in the TV world. I have no idea. But it was sort of my wife who introduced me to that. We don't watch that kind of stuff nowadays, but I remember that time, like, this is interesting. This is really interesting. So then I just came up with the idea of combining that sort of ridiculous drama with horror. And there you have Red Colony. And also these graphic novels that were all over Japan back then. And to this day, on the PlayStation Vita, which was dead in the West. But here you could buy these graphic novels, and my Japanese was really bad. And I thought, man, all these graphic novels looks cool or interesting. I just wish I could play them, but my Japanese was not so good. So I decided to make my own graphic novel. And then sort of with my love for the horror games, even though I hate playing them because I'm just a pussy. And also this drama from the stuff that my wife introduced me to. So that became Red Colony. And now to Sunset Moon. I was one of my fondest memories as a child was Harvest Moon on the Super Nintendo. And my brother and I and my sister has been Natsume fans since then, the studio who made the original Harvest Moons at least. And the Harvest Moon games just got worse and worse and worse for every iteration. Like the one on the Super Nintendo and the one on PlayStation, I think the undertitle was A Wonderful Life maybe. These were awesome. They were really great. And I have just always wanted to do a farming game. Even when I started with Knife Boy, I wanted to do a farming game. But I just felt like that's going to be way too complicated. And then, of course, Stardew Valley came out. And I was like, someone did it. Like, someone did a proper version of how Harvest Moon should have been for all these years when they just got worse and worse and worse. So, it's one of those moments when you think you have an idea for a game that you want to make that no one else is making, and then, bam, there you have it. It's out. Someone else did it. Same thing with Guacamelee 2 came out before Knife Boy. I thought I was, like, making something like a love letter to Guacamelee because they never make sequels, but then there you have it. It came out around the same... Well, Knife Boy got in development hell by the time Guacamelee 2 came out. But my point is, you always think you're onto something unique and interesting and new, or like reviving a game that no one seems to make anymore, and then someone else actually is thinking the same thing as you and get it out there. It's always like that. But anyway, that's why I wanted to make a farming game. But then of course, like I try to do with all my games, I want to have a unique twist to them because I don't want to make just a farming game for the sake of making a farming game. So I just thought about I really enjoyed writing the drama in the Red Colony games, this kind of ridiculous drama. So, it's really ridiculous in the Red Colony games. So I toned down that in Sunset Moon, but it's still there. Like you can, date and cheat on your wife or go on dates and hook someone up, like, get in bed with someone else and all that kind of stuff. And then I think it's going to be really enjoyable for the player, or shocking, hopefully, that you can do these things. Because if you like these types of games, you wouldn't expect that. And I'm really going down the social rabbit hole with this game. So if you play a lot of these games, usually you if you are gay, for example, and you want to play as a gay person, then for some reason all the guys in the village are gay. In my game, that's not the case. So you can be gay in real world or whatever, or want to play as a gay person, but that doesn't mean that all the guys in the game are gay. Some of them are, some of them are not. Some of them are even slightly homophobic. So that's like the big twist to my game, is that social, I'm not sure what word I'm going to use on that, but I want to make it feel alive, you know, like real, because in the real world, that's how it works, and I want to have that in that game. I don't really remember why
it's like with The Sims.
Oh.
Yeah. But it's an interesting idea. It's like with The Sims that everyone is just like pansexual or something, that it doesn't matter like what they're born as or anything. It's everyone can be with everyone because it's you as a player who controls everything. But that's interesting, I think, to take a bold statement about, I guess, the characters in your world.
Yeah, and I honestly still sort of worry if this is going to be a problem later on when the game is about to come out. But I hope the platform holders understand what I'm going for here. Because when I was backpacking in South America, I was hanging out with this gay fella, and we met another gay fella. And then another person in the room, this was, you know, a hostel full of foreigners from all over the world. And then one of them were like, "Hey, James, he's also gay. You guys can be together." And then the other guy went, "Why does all straight people think that just because I'm gay, I'm going to get in anyone, like in any other gay pants, any other gay guy's pants, sort of?"
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, that's, I never thought about that. Because obviously that's how it is, right? Just because you're straight doesn't mean you want to get in the pants on every lady you want to see on the street, right? It's the same thing. So that really...
Yeah, exactly.
When he said that really got in my head, and I was like, huh. So when I made Sunset Moon, I was like, yeah, that's so true, and I want that in my game. Like, just because you play as a gay person doesn't mean that every guy in the game is gay. There will, however, be some one guy is in the closet, so you as a player have to get him out of the closet, and that's sort of the drama I like to write in the dialogues.
Cool. Interesting, but that's a sort of a inclusive way to write the characters, I suppose.
Yeah, the dialogue tree, I'm so proud of it, cool, and I really hope that people will appreciate it. But I'm not sure if people will be able to appreciate it, because if you only play the game once, or if you don't quite understand it, you might not understand how super deep it goes. Because you can talk to one person, if you're straight and you talk to him, versus if you're gay talking to him, and also based on his likeness to you, the dialogue can change, because it's so, every person's dialogue tree is so, it branch out like all over the place. So I'm super proud of it, and that it works as well as it does at the moment. We'll see if I manage to fuck it up somehow, but I really hope people will appreciate it.
Cool. But I guess back to the question. So at like 12 months ago, where were you with the game? And like give us the sort of arc of how it's gone for the past year, I suppose.
So I guess a year ago, that's when about the time we came to Japan, and I was in the early stages. I can't even remember, but I feel like I had sort of start working on some of the functions or the mechanics in the game. And my goal this time around was to make sure that all the mechanics works for the game before I start building it. But I did have, like, the whole world map was still there, and all the facades of every building was in place. And also a couple of NPCs was in the place, so I could experiment with this dialogue system. The dialogue system is something that I've been reworking maybe 3 times throughout this year. And every time I do it, it's like 2-3 weeks of work to make it work the way I want. Right. So that's been a lot of the time to work with the dialogue system. But it's scary to think back, because it's just blurry. I just feel like I haven't done anything, but at the same time, I know I've been working on this game all the time, so I can't quite pinpoint what I've been doing. But the last couple of months, well, the last month, I've been working with the save, load and save system, which is like the final big problematic, difficult thing I had to deal with. And that's working now. And I'm so happy that it works. And it works really well as well with the, it's just saves everything, all the booleans and all the values every time I load and save. And I have three save slots so I can load and save between them and everything works. So that's something I've been working on a lot, and it's working, which is awesome. But I guess for the past year, it's gone from a very early prototype build to a almost ready to ship a demo build. And that demo I mentioned in previous episode is supposed to be basically a vertical slice, which I will also hopefully show up to publishers or something like that, what the game has to offer. But when you make a vertical slice, like, I will show off some of the stuff that is in the game. So you can imagine that the full game will have that, but more of that, plus more functions later on. But yeah, it's been going from a early prototype to a quite playable game. I think in the end of January, the demo will be pretty much done. And then when that demo is done, it's probably, you know, a 5-6 hour long experience you can have on this, on Sunset Moon. So a lot have happened.
Cool. And how is the demo going? So how far would you say that is away from being playable?
Well, you know, when you make games, you work on individual functions, for example, but the difficult thing is to tie them all together to make them work in balance, in harmony with each other. And what I'm doing now, I wrote a long list of things that I want to include in the demo. So I have these storylines, I've written all of them, and I have, right now I'm actually working on making the NPCs. So I want the NPCs to be able to sleep, wake up, walk in all directions. So we're talking sprite sheets. So they should walk up, down, left, right, and sleep. And they should be able to idle, like standing still, up, right, left, down. And also you can knock them out. So beat them up and they will sort of go into some sort of knocked out position. So these are the, I have like 10 more to do, and one of them take about 1 day to make. So I think in 10 days, all the NPCs are done. And after that, I feel like all the graphics is done for the demo itself. There will be, you can always do improvements on graphics, but I think I will just be, I'm going to try to just be satisfied with what is there. And then the last thing I'm going to do is do the quest system, which I've been messing around with before, and I know how it works ish because now it's been a couple of months and I sort of forgot, but I think it should take maybe a week to implement that. So now we're up to 17 days, and then, you know, it's super hard to predict how long things take. So yeah, maybe a month, and then the demo should be ready. And then in the demo you could basically explore like the first month of the game, the spring month, and there are two events in that month, and there are like four storylines you can do. And I'm gonna make in the demo, I might make something like a black screen that pops up and say, this storyline has reached its conclusion in this demo, please look forward to the full game, or something like that. So I try to make the storylines end on a cliffhanger, and then you can have plants, grow crops, sell crops, buy stuff, improve your equipment. Some of your equipment you can improve by, you know, collecting orbs and stuff like that. And you take it to the blacksmith and he will upgrade your, for example, your hammer, so you can break a bigger rock. And then you can, by breaking this big rock, you can enter a cave, for example. So there's a lot of things you can do in the demo. But yeah. But now that I'm saying it out loud, I wonder if 1 month is enough to finalize it. But I will see.
Interesting. And so will your demo, first of all, question A, is it's going to be playable by the public, or is it something that you're going to send to publishers?
to the public. I'm just going to put it out on Steam. I want as many people as possible to play it to get feedback, because at this point, I mean, like, I haven't even balanced the game at all at this point, because I'm just so busy making sure that everything is working as it should. So it might be super unbalanced once it's out. So let's say you start playing the demo, and then you can basically buy all the things that is in the demo within a week. Then that means it's quite unbalanced, because in these games, typically you want to, there should always be something to chase, like improve your house or gather resources to build a bridge somewhere and so on. So it could be super unbalanced, and I think the best way to deal with this is by inviting as many people as possible to play the game and try to get some feedback from that. But I do, of course, hope that the big hook in my game is the story and the world itself. So that's not... it's difficult to get feedback on that, I suppose. But, at least I hope to get some feedback on the balance, like, if it feels like it's too difficult to build stuff. But then again, you know, it's only 1 month of the game, so this game should continue over summer, fall, winter, and so on. But anyway, it's going to go out to everyone, because I want to get some feedback.
Nice. And then question B is, so will this demo either be that you play from where the point in time where it starts to like the end, and then if you want to keep playing it, you have to restart your game, or will it be like sort of Groundhog Day where you can only do this much, but you can play it like forever and do, you know, build up your small little demo world?
I have a bug in the game, so you can't go from spring to summer, and I'm gonna leave that bug in it, so it will just like cycle. You will just be spring all over again. So on the 28th of spring, it will go back to the first of spring, and then it's just gonna repeat like that. And that's because I want you to be able to fulfill all the storylines, which means that you might, let's say you, one of the storylines, for example, it won't start until you have befriend one of the NPCs to a certain point. So if you figure that out on the 27th of spring, then you only have one more day to do his storylines, which you might not be able to do because you need certain stuff to help him out. So I thought it would be just better to let the player just repeat spring over and over again if he's interested in the storylines. But the demo, if it's not too hard, I want you to be able to get the demo data over to the full game when that's out. However, I'm still planning, like, some of the storylines might change before the full game is out. So I'm not quite sure how I'm going to do that. But I also think that if you get really hooked on the game and you just keep making money, and then the full game is out and then you have all that money in the game, then you've sort of ruined the challenge for yourself in the full game if you have all this money. So if I would bring over your data from the demo to the full game, you know, a year from now, it will be that maybe I would have some, look at the data from the demo, how much people make in the first month, and sort of make some average. So that's the kind of money you bring over to the full game. Something like that. But that's a very complicated thing to do.
Cool. It's sort of interesting. It reminds me about, I think it was from Witcher 2 to Witcher 3 or something like that, that you could bring your save file from the one game to the next one. So, like, depending on the choices you made in one game,
Mass Effect,
had consequences in the next one. Yes, that might be it, yeah.
Yeah, I love demos here with like, my son and I were playing Pikmin on Nintendo Switch. And it's just, it gives you enough playtime to get hooked, and then you want to buy the full game. So I'm sort of like, oh, I should go and get the full game now. And then you can just transfer your data. So we actually started two different save files. Now it's wintertime, so we play games together in the evenings. You know, he's only 3, so he doesn't quite understand. But in Pikmin, you can be this tar Amy thingy, and then he can just shoot stuff, and I do most of the stuff. point is that that's a perfect way of, you know, giving people an opportunity to play the game, but also bring over the save data to the full game. And I think that's awesome. And also in the, obviously in the Mass Effect games, that was really cool that they transferred the data from game to game. So I hope I can do something like that, but you know, that will be, we'll see how the demo goes and if there are people playing it and giving feedback. Because I would also like to, based on the feedback I get from the demo, I want to upgrade the demo as I am actually developing the full game as well. Because whatever I can do in the demo, that would also work for the full game. So it would sort of make sense to just keep on upgrading the demo with updates from the feedback I get. And then I'm even thinking, because I think I said before that there would be a small part of the game where you can play. And I'm even thinking that maybe, so you can't become a shanty person, for example, in the demo, but maybe later on, 6 months from now, I will unlock that thing so you can become a shanty person. And that would also unlock a part of Shanty Town and maybe two more side quests or something like that. So the people who are there for the demo and getting, are interested in the game, they will sort of have something to look forward to, and it will be obviously be for free because it's just a demo. Anyway, that's enough about Sunset Moon.
Cool.
I feel like we have talked enough about my game now, so I would like to hear what you have to say, Otto, like with your game. What have happened the past year? I know you've been working wild on the House of Games episode, editing and all that, but you have also been working on a game on the side, so where from where to where?
Yes, so I guess from prototype to prototype. As you said, I guess like before starting House of Games, I did work on a different game, which was also a farming game ish, but more like the sort of Overcooked style, where it's sort of like going from one plant to the next and watering and stuff, and it's sort of fast paced. But when I started the podcast, since we did it weekly, I immediately like stopped the game development just to be sure that I would catch up with the podcast and everything. So that sort of took me on a hiatus for most of the year, I would say. But then we started to, like, eventually me and my brother, who are making the game, started to come to a sort of a consensus that maybe this game, we should just abandon it, because we worked on it for quite a while, but it's not, it was supposed to be like this small game that would just show off that we can release something and then build from there. But it's sort of, because of feature creep again, it became something bigger, and then it was better to abandon it, I think. So now we're working on a very, very small game, and we also switched from Unity to Godot, which means having to learn a new engine as well. And I would also like to say that this was before the whole Unity debacle with the pricing changes, because previously we've used Unity and it worked well, but I thought more and more that it felt like shovelware, the whole engine, that there's just so much stuff that's very like difficult to use, or it's not intuitive where the buttons are, or it doesn't feel like the updates like fixes things or quality of life updates. It feels like Unity is just busy with everything except making a good game engine. So, you know, in 5 years' time, let's say, it doesn't feel like anything is going to change with the engine, other than, sure, maybe more beautiful rendering or something, but like the experience of using the engine probably won't change that much. So I thought more and more about like it would be nice to do something like open source, and to do something, because as many, I think open source is something I do believe in. So it would be nice to try to live by those words as well, if possible. And then I looked at Godot as well, because it, especially when 4.0 came out, I think that was before, a bit before the Unity pricing changes. And then it seemed like the new features in that made it more capable of 3D, which is what we want to make.
Well, I ask, maybe we should cut this in the beginning. We have, I'm in the Japanese mountains now and my internet is garbage. So there is a quite delay throughout this episode. You listeners might not hear it, but because of the editing, but it is one there. Maybe we can put this in the beginning of the episode. So we will let each other talk for longer instances. And then once we are done talking, we have to sit quiet to let the connection catch up. So now, but anyway, I want to ask this question. Oh, fuck, I even forgot my question because I went on that rant.
Something about Unity and Godot, perhaps.
Yes. Living by your words to do open source. I really like that. God damn it. Well, continue. I will. It might come back.
Yeah, exactly. Just let's do the Swedish classroom style and raise hands if we have questions or stuff, I suppose.
But I can't see you because I had to turn off your...
Oh, right. Yeah, it's the internet connectivity problems. God damn it.
Damn it.
I'll just scream or holler and I'll hear it, probably. Okay, so where were I? So, yeah. So we wanted to just, that's at least what I thought about. Version 4 came out, which was better for 3D. And then I thought the engine then felt more ready to be able to use, basically, for what we wanted. I think a lot of people... Like, to me, it feels like a lot of people, like, really overestimate how much it matters, like, the capabilities of the engine. Like, without factoring in what you can do yourself. Because, sure, you could use Unity or Unreal, and they can do amazing things. But me, as an indie developer, I cannot do all those amazing things. I don't have, like, the experience even to understand what most of those tools do. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was thinking, well, what you said there, it rhymes well with the Nintendo games, which I've become a big fan of since the Nintendo Switch, I suppose. And even more now when I have a child, because they're so kids-friendly, and it's just so much fun to sit and play games with your child. And my point is that the Nintendo platforms are usually much weaker than the Xbox and PlayStation ones, but the games just look still amazing and are probably the best games out there on the Nintendo platforms. So the engine itself, I don't really think matters in terms of how impressive you can make the game look. It's all about how you play the game or the game mechanics themselves. But that was not my question. My question I wanted to ask before, and I remember it now, was how difficult was it to change engine? And also, how long did you work on Unity before you jumped over to Godot? Like, I remember I made flash films when I was a teenager. And when I started working on Knifeboy, I had to learn Photoshop. And I still had these shortcut... commands imprinted in my fingers since I was a teenager, and it was just like awful to use Photoshop because they didn't work, the shortcuts I was used to, how to use the rope tool or whatever, and I was going nuts. But anyway, I imagine you must have had that same feeling when you went from Unity to Godot, if you had worked with Unity for a long period of time, that is.
Yeah, so the when I look at the Medium blogs that I made about game development, so the first one is from August of 2021. So I imagine it's like maybe 2-ish years on a hobbyist level, so a little back and forth. So, but I think at least that it's similar with many other tools, like take programming, for example, or I don't know, photography, anything, that usually it's not like reinventing the wheel to change engine, that the concepts are still the same. You want to have like 3D models of stuff, and you want to, I don't know, implement keyboard inputs, for example, stuff like that. And there's a lot of similarities. So it's rather about finding whatever tool you want to use, what it's called and how it's used in the new tool. And of course, it's not a trivial matter and you can't just change like that. But it was, I guess, a learning curve at first, because there's not that many tutorials and stuff for it. But I would say that it's when ChatGPT came into the picture, and especially when it, because initially ChatGPT had indexed the Godot manuals up until version 3.6, but after I got the premium version of ChatGPT, it eventually integrated Bing, which meant I could then Google. So then ChatGPT could Google in the like latest manuals for however you did things, and then produce instructions from that. So that made it super easy, much easier than I thought it would be. I mean, going into Godot, I didn't think it, that was before ChatGPT, so it's sort of a like a before and after, but I thought like, yeah, I'm going to learn it anyhow. And now it's just so much easier for any engine switch, I think. Yeah, so it's been a learning curve, but it's, I think it's more a more intuitive engine to use. Like the experience to use it is so much better than with Unity, even though it might not have all of the fancy stuff that Unity has. So for me, at least as a hobbyist, it's like the interface and stuff, it's much more easier to use. It's, as I understand it, the Godot editor itself is a Godot game, or whatever you would call it. So it's built in the same engine that, that it is. So that means also that the engine itself, like the file that you run, is maybe 100 megabytes or something like that. So like launching it even on my potato computer goes great. It's possible to edit on like your phone if you want to. Lots of stuff like that that feels like impossible or possibly like years and years away with Unity, because starting Unity was always like you would start it and then you go grab coffee or something, because it takes maybe 3 minutes for it to boot up and load everything every time you start it. And you know, I would usually mostly do it on like my stationary computer and not the laptop, because, you know, just clicking the play button takes so much time, for example.
Yeah, I think something you touched on there, the all the fancy stuff in Unity, something I sent this presentation video I'm about to release by the time the demo is out. There will be some changes in it. I sent it to, for example, Yaha, who was on an episode, I can't remember what number, but we talked about his Realms game. And he pointed out that the water in my game doesn't look good. And I think what he meant was that it wasn't pixel art. It was kind of like a shader. And it is. And I felt, since I sort of agree with him. I feel like I'm a purist when it comes to games. I don't like the idea of using other people's stuff. And I don't like the idea of using shaders. I don't like the idea of using any of these fancy things. And it's something I've learned while making games, is that every time you update your game, or let's say you want to port your game to Nintendo Switch or PlayStation or whatever, and your version has to be the same version as the PlayStation test kit, is running or something like that, all these shaders and all these fancy things tend to break, and you sit for days trying to fix them. And I feel like the purer things are, the better. My previous games use no shaders. I never used shaders until Sunset Moon. And now I'm always feeling like I want to move away from them because I want it to be as pure as possible by maybe redoing the water to pixel art. But, you know, I could still make it transparent. And I hope, I could still use some sort of shader to make the reflection, which I like with the water in the game. I'm not sure what my point was with this story, except that the fancy pantsy stuff, I don't think maybe it's that necessary. If you just there are other ways to get around it without using a fancy pantsy graphic engine, I think was the moral of this story.
Yeah, right. Well, I think, as I said, I remember when I used Unity. And this was maybe 2 years ago when I was like in the middle of doing the other farming game. Then I saw a video of somebody switching to Godot at that time instead of Unity. And I think I saw another video of somebody like making their own engine, and like their motivation for it was the same, that they said like, oh, well, Unity can't do the things I want to do with game development. And to me, it felt like so... very like, what we call it, like self-righteous, that you have this like grand idea that no engine can do except your own, or you have to switch to Godot. And it feels like, to me, most likely you can do like maybe all of the things you want to do with engines, like almost any engine. I guess some hobbyist engine, sure, it can't do a lot of the basic stuff, but say like Godot or Unreal or Unity, it feels like to me that it can do like almost everything. I mean, even if you can't do it in the way you want it to, probably there's a way to do it. Yeah, and it feels like in essence, it doesn't really matter what engine you use. You can probably get the task done. And for me, it's just more of a, I guess, philosophically aesthetic choice. Like, I like open source, and that's why I use it. It's not necessarily that the other engines can't do it.
Yeah, I wish I could have switched over to Godot as well. I mean, I might still be an opening at some point, but I'm sort of locked into Unity due to my dialogue system and the quest system, which is bought from Pixel Cruncher, I think they're called. Pixel Crunchers, I mentioned them before.
Yeah.
And that's like an asset pack I bought that lays down the foundation to how these things work. And like I mentioned before in this episode, I'm so proud of what I managed to do with that dialogue system, which is not, you know, how... you know, it's not how it's supposed to be used, but I, you know, talked to the people who made it and they helped out to, well, if you want this to happen in the dialogue system, do this. And then I made my own sort of the functions I want it to be is in the game now. But if that would go to Godot, I wish I could move over as well, because I am also a big open source fan. I really, really hate this. I mean, I want only to be on open source. I still want like an email that is open source, so I don't have to be linked or bound to any company. Just this morning, I had one of those moments when I had to log in somewhere and I forgot my password, as I always do. And then they send me a text message to my phone, and that was the Swedish phone, which I still have here in Japan. So I had to put that on charge because it was dead. And I had to like use this 2 authorization, all this crap. And in the back of my mind, it's constantly this nagging feeling that it is this sort of overreaching big brother bullshit society we're living in. I always rant about that with Sweden, that everything is digitalized. I hate it. But anyway, my point is, open source is just like, I don't know how, if it's actually open source or if the information is saved somewhere, but it just feels like the right thing to do. So yeah, I totally see your point from my point of view, and I respect that. I wish I could move over to Godot as well.
Cool. And I think also to get back to answer the question, I suppose, what I've been doing the past year in terms of game development. So anyhow, we did switch over to Godot and started like surveying it a bit and like just trying it out. I think both me and my brother were like happily surprised. I thought it was going to be a lot harder, but there's like certain things that works a lot better. For example, like importing stuff from Blender, you can just instead of... So somebody could probably correct me if I'm misremembering this, but I think it's something like in Unity, if you want to have a 3D model, you have to export it from the like native.blend format to FBX, I think it is, which is another format. It's like doing from a Photoshop file to a JPEG, I assume. It's something like that. So it doesn't retain as much information, and then there's always some like mismatch between Unity and Blender. So like when you do like a bone structure and stuff, it doesn't like quite match, and then you have to do for animation and things like that. So you have to sort of manually adjust it. But with Godot, for example, it had built in like native support for the Blender files. I think it's .blend. So then you don't have to export anything. You just save like the project in Blender, and then you just import those into Godot, and there's like no mismatch, and it just works. And it's just mind-boggling to me that Unity hasn't done something like that since Blender is also open source. So there's just was some like quality of life things that really worked without hassle for us. And then we started building, and then I did like I did with the previous game, that I started blogging about it, just writing the process of doing it. And we had like a very niche idea, I suppose. It's just a planet and then a train going around it, and then it has to stay like in the dark area and not in the sun, otherwise you lose. So far we've gotten the planet, we have a sun, we have a backdrop of stars, we have a train track, and then we have the train, and then and a little character on the train, and then it goes around the planet, and then you have a button you can press to make it go faster, and now it also loses speed like by itself. So the way we've done it is that, so I thought about like you have a planet spinning around the sun, and you have a background of stars and stuff, and then you have a train going around it, and I thought if you're not careful about how you do the camera setup, I think you're just gonna create motion sickness and people are gonna puke from even looking at it. So the way we decided to do it is just having everything static except the train on the planet. So or the planet, it spins around its own axis, so that means like different areas of the Earth, I suppose, is gonna be lit up depending on when, just like our planet, and then we have the train going around that, but it's sort of a optical illusion that it's not really going around the sun, it's just going around its own axis, and then the train is just going like against the direction that the Earth is spinning. So it looks like it's just going around the Earth, and just to avoid motion sickness and make it super clear where the train is relative to the sun, for example.
I wanted to ask how nowadays, how many hours per week can you work on this game?
Usually zero. So that depends a little bit on life, you know, and the podcast and things. But I'm really, I have my my predictions for the coming year is that I probably will be able to work more on it, because now I can, you know, produce a podcast episode in a single day if I want to, like really do it fast, and just a couple of hours just to edit some stuff and then release it. So it feels like it's gonna be hopefully more time to work on it. We'll see what happens in the future, of course, but I think it's gonna be reasonable that I will be able to do some stuff.
Cool.
So hopefully, like, it would be nice to, like, the old routine that I used to have was, like, before work, I would do maybe 10 or 15 minutes maximum per day, but that was, like, every day, so then it was, like, a constant forward momentum in that project. But now it's been, like, maybe, you know, when we've done a couple of episodes, like pre-recorded it, and then I edit it, and then I have maybe a week where I don't have anything else to do, so I can do some language learning and some game developments and stuff. So it's been probably like, so I think I started this project maybe in August or September of this year. So it's maybe been maybe 2 or 3 months where I've been able to work maybe 10, 15 minutes per day. Yeah, something like that.
How, like, because the game is, like you said, a very small game used to make something. Have you ever tried to, like, get together with your brother, like, a Sunday? Tell your partner, like, no, tomorrow is Sunday, I'm going to make games. And then you sit, like, a proper 12-hour more. You don't have kids. You can fucking sit 18 hours straight. Have you ever tried that? Or is that something that interests you? Yeah. Or is it just that life is too busy?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've talked about that, actually, because we did one game jam together once only, but we really enjoyed that. And we have talked about, like, it would be so fun to do something like that, except with the game. So that you would, as you say, like, sit 12 hours, or you do a full weekend where you just, like, hash out features and then try to complete it as fast as possible, and then just release it and then fix things after. But we, you know, life comes in the way, and we we're not living in the same city anymore, unfortunately. So that makes it, you know, we could do it digitally, I suppose, but... As with all things, I think it would be easier to isolate yourself if you would be, like, in the same room and then just shut the door and nobody goes out until it's done or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I've got to say, though, like, me living abroad most of my adult life, I call my brother once in a while when he's off on a weekend, for example, and we just sit and talk for, like we do, maybe 5 minutes, and then we sit quiet for 2 hours, and then we go, well, that was good talk, see you next month or something. Like, we do that often, where we don't really talk, we just sit quiet. He's maybe sitting play a game in Sweden, we don't even see each other, for because he don't use webcams and social media at all. So it's just like, I had his free calls to Sweden with Skype, so he just sit quiet and do his thing, and I sit quiet here and do my thing. So you could do something like that. And I was going to suggest, like, if you guys want to do this sort of digital meet and greet game session, invite me too. And we can do the three of us. We don't have to talk while we do it. But just like knowing that someone else is there working on his thing, I think it can be enough to motivate the other person too. That's also something my brother do sometimes. He work on some game and I work on my game, and it's sort of like it works in a great way, because you don't want to be the one who doesn't work, because you know that on the other side of this phone someone else is working, and so on. So that could be a good motivational thing. So if you want to do that, we should definitely do that. That could be fun. Maybe make an episode out of it. Yeah.
But that would be fun. Maybe that would be cool to do if we ever get a sort of a Patreon following or something, to do that as some sort of like bonus content or something, like a weekly, look, we're making games, and then actually just make it in a stream or something, no editing, nothing, just here it is.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I will keep that in mind, and that would be fun to do, like set off some time per week or something to do that. Cool. Yeah, and I guess as like the last bit, so far I guess we've come to, like, since it's a very small thing, the whole game, we've done like most of the core features. I think now it's just like setting a loose condition and then like some sort of score or something, and then maybe a game over screen that shows how well you did. Something like Flipper Bird or something, where it's just this many laps around the earth or something, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, I think even like because the time difference and I have children, we should definitely do that. You go Sunday morning, tell your wife or girlfriend, partner, you know, we go to church, as you do, and after that, I'm going to sit down and make games 8 hours straight. So that would be like dinner-ish in Japan. So I will join the first 6 hours because I'm an old man and I need to sleep around 10. But I will join until 10 o'clock, and then you and your brother can continue. And we could do this sort of a Zoom thing. We don't have to talk. Just we all sit and work on our own things. That could be, I think that would be a good motivational thing for you and to get that proper 5-6 hour slot. I feel like you could do so much on that, on the game, and that will maybe push the game to the next level it needs to reach, so you don't lose motivation or something. Not that it doesn't sound like you have lost any motivation, but still, it would be fun to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, something like that would be really fun. Absolutely.
Hmm.
Cool. I guess, dear listeners, you will find out more about it in the future as we hash it out.
Yes.
Nice. I think with that, maybe it's time to close the episode then. Do you have anything else to add before?
It's been a good year. Good fun to make this podcast. I'm very super happy with all the guests we've had and the insight from everything. And I told my wife yesterday, the other day, like, if we didn't start this podcast, I'm not sure if I would know what ChatGPT is, because I really live this sort of offline life. But, you know, I do listen to podcasts, so I have heard it here and there. So maybe I would have heard about it, but I felt like you really pushed me to try it out. Because if I remember correctly, when you mentioned it on one of the previous episodes, I was like, no, this is bullshit. Fuck robots. Oh, now I swore again. Sorry. But anyway, I felt like you pushed me to try it out. And man, if I didn't do that, I wonder where I would be. I feel like I've been super productive this year. Despite, you know, also doing this podcast. For me, it's not as much work as it is for you. But doing this podcast and being husband and a father and working, it's just been very productive year, despite having a family, which really changed everything in terms of how much I can work. Wow. I like to think back at the days before I had a family. Whoa, I worked so much, it's insane. Now I can only work 8 hours a day ish but it's still productive year, and I thanks to ChatGPT and you, so it's been a good year.
Yeah.
And you?
Yeah, well, same. I think, go ahead.
No, I was, this hand gesture was, how about you, Otto? Tell me about your year to wrap it up year.
Exactly. So you see this, as you said, maybe the listeners won't understand how much lag it is with our connection, but quite a bit. to continue I would just say the same, like I'm really happy really happy that we started this podcast and I met you, and like there's, as you said, there's so many people that we met and talked to, and like I wouldn't even imagine before starting this that that we would do. Like I, as you said in the anniversary episode, I thought also this was gonna be like an on-premise, like Umeå thing, and not like remotely. But now I'm in a way really glad that we did it the way we did, because there's like so many people, like all over the world, like everywhere from like Brazil to Japan and like places in between that we met. So super happy about that. There's a lot of insight and a lot of stuff we learned, and it feels also like that's something I think about sometimes, that you know, even though I don't get as much game development out of life as I would want to sometimes, that I still like doing this podcast. Like every episode I release, I feel like I've accomplished something. Like this podcast is out there. I've done it. You know, even if I would like die tomorrow, hopefully not, knock on wood. But even if that would happen, this is still released. It's out there. I've accomplished it. You know, it's done, and which is more than I can say about like game development so far. But so that's also something I'm really happy about, that, you know, it's been a whole year and I haven't released the game, but still I've accomplished this thing and done this podcast for a whole year. And that's not everybody can say that. So that's also something I'm really happy about related to the podcast.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I guess with that, Happy New Year to everyone, and I guess we'll, I guess when you're listening to this, it is the New Year 2024, but yeah, glad you're with us, hope you stay with us, let us know if there's a guest or a topic that you would like us to discuss, or if you would like to come on the show, for example. We would be happy to talk about whatever it is related to game development, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. See you next week, or see you next year, I suppose. Bye-bye.
See you next year. Bye.